This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
If the regime tries to hold elections, they will probably have the same problem that they had between April and July, which is that candidates from major parties would refuse to participate, and you would have either no participants or insignificant participants, which is exactly why the previous attempted elections was canceled.
That's William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, on upcoming Algerian elections. Details coming up. Also, the World Food Program says Zimbabwe is facing its worst case of food insecurity in recent history. And a number of former top Algerian officials, including the former president's brother, have been handed 15 years prison sentences. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The World Food Program says Zimbabwe is facing its worst case of food insecurity in recent history, with special attention needed for urban poverty. The UN agency says economic decline, recurring droughts, and the recent cyclone Idai are the main reasons. The United States has donated about $42 million, but WFP says the aid will only reach half of those who need it most. For VOA, Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Eddie Rowe, the head of the World Food Program in Zimbabwe, says about 5.5 million people will need food assistance until the next harvest begins in April. Rowe says for years, the need for food assistance was confined to rural areas, but now some 2 million people in urban areas need help as well.
We are talking of urban poverty, where you have not just food insecurity, but high rates of urban unemployment. So when you look at it now, what we are trying to do is to come together for us to be able to intervene in an integrated manner. So it's not just addressing food insecurity, but addressing urban poverty.
The Rome-based UN agent said this year it started food assistance early in Zimbabwe because of the ailing economy, recurring droughts, and the impact of Cyclone Idai in March. As to sum up the food insecurity situation in Zimbabwe, Rowe said,
"It's bad. Even though I've been in Zimbabwe for roughly just under 5 years, when you look at trend analysis and the situation right now, I think in the history of this country, you have more hungry people than ever before in Zimbabwe."
Brian Nichols is the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe. He spoke this week after his government chipped in $41.9 million for food assistance.
"The agricultural sector in Zimbabwe has the potential to revive this economy. However, it has been jeopardized by years of mismanagement of resources. We support Zimbabwe's renewed efforts to tackle corruption, which, along with political reforms, can increase growth and investment confidence."
The government says irrigation is the key to reviving the agricultural sector and ending the food shortages. Conrad Zawe is the Irrigation Development Director in Zimbabwe's Ministry of Agriculture.
"We have got a very big potential of irrigation in Zimbabwe, which is currently underutilized. Zimbabwe has got a lot of dams and has got two big rivers, the Zambezi and the Limpopo, which can be utilized for irrigation."
The government, working with the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, is repairing irrigation schemes on the country's farms, most of which have been neglected over the past 20 years. The UN says irrigation can counteract the recurring droughts that have hurt Zimbabwe's farm output in recent years. Even with the irrigation schemes working, Zimbabwe will need several months to reap a new harvest and overcome the hunger so many of its people are experiencing. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Zimbabwe's capital, like many parts of the country, has been dealing with persistent water shortages. The situation escalated when the city shut down the main water processing plant, citing lack of foreign currency to buy treatment chemicals. The plant has since reopened, but only has enough chemicals to last 7 days. Residents are to find water for drinking, cooking, and washing. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has the details.
That's a bush pump borehole, which has become a standard fixture in most of Harare's high-density suburbs, with no water coming out of their taps. Harare resident Elvis Joe explains how residents have been coping.
This problem has been there for some time now. We have gotten used to it. We have bought extra containers to store water when it is there. And this also helps us when water is not there. We can always use that. Sometimes the water now can take longer days. Then it becomes a challenge. And then we have to go and queue it with few boreholes which are in the suburb.
The city council had shut down Morton Jeffrey, Harare's main water processing plant. Tuesday evening, authorities announced that they had received chemicals enough to last a week. Imelda Banda says authorities have failed.
I'm very disappointed, very frustrated that the bills come through and we're expected to pay, but we get no water at all. Are we just waking up and realizing, oh, by the way, we have water to supply to the nation? Like, why is it we're only told at the very last minute? I mean, if things had been spoken about ahead of time, we would have run around and made a plan.
Joe says even when the water is coming out of the tap, its quality is questionable, thanks to aging infrastructure that the government is struggling to replace.
The quality of water has deteriorated. You cannot drink it. You cannot cook with it. It's just dirty. Even bathing, you have to think twice. But that's what we have, so we're just doing with what we have.
Harare's persistent water shortages have often been cited as the root cause of cholera and typhoid outbreaks, as residents opt for unsafe water sources. There are widespread concerns that the current crisis could create another wave of illnesses and deaths. Stakeholders say, at the household level, women bear the brunt of such shortages, as they often have to go look for water elsewhere. Critics say government has to declare a national crisis so that the water issue can be prioritized and quickly resolved. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The UN General Assembly is in high gear this week as world leaders, diplomats, and non-government organizations work on strategies to deal with the planet's greatest challenges. This year, the focus is on climate, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, finance for development, universal health care coverage, and gender equality. To find out more about the state of gender equality, especially in Africa, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Kotiu Iverson, President and CEO of Women Deliver, a New York-based NGO that partners with thousands of organizations to promote empowerment of women and girls around the globe.
There are five big summits, but what we're focusing particularly on, putting that gender lens to everything that's happening, whether it's at home, mm-hmm. whether it's at work, whether it's in the big picture economy.
Why are women particularly the focus when it comes to talking about climate change, for example? The world's warming for everyone.
They are the ones who teach their kids to swim when the waters rise. They are the one who will be forced to walk when the soil depletes. So, of course, they should also be on the decision-making table.
Now, what about universal health coverage?
Women are the caregivers mostly. They are the guardians of children's health, family health, community health. And if we don't have a health system that responds to their needs, we will fail.
What are some of the health needs for women that the UN should be focusing on, especially in Africa?
One of the very important things to look at is women's sexual and reproductive health and rights, the right to decide and the ability to decide on their own body and fertility, who to love, who to have children with, when to have them, whether to have them, if they have them. That is very important because that is also what makes it possible for a woman to get that education, to be in that job.
What did Women Deliver actually do this year to prepare to bring these issues to the attention of world leaders at the UN this year?
What happened was when the negotiations for example, the big Health for All summit took form, we could see that girls and women and gender equality was left out. So Women Deliver, together with International Women's Health Coalition and Women in Global Health, mobilized for gender equality in universal health coverage. That happened in March. Today there's more than 100 organizations from 50 countries that are working with their governments, developing the arguments, coming with the finance discussions so that it can become real.
You and I spoke during the 2018 UN General Assembly. I'm wondering if you could summarize the overall progress or lack of progress that African women have been able to make over the past year. What's the trend been as you see it, especially in Africa?
When I take my optimistic hat on, we see that more countries now have gender equal cabinets. If I look at Rwanda, they are taking leaps when it comes to women's health, including reproductive health and maternal health, women dying in childbirth. We're seeing it in terms of political participation. We're seeing it in terms of economic participation. And Ethiopia has not only a gender equal cabinet, but also a head of the National Bank and the head of the High Court. We have other countries that's moving in that direction. So that's on the positive side. But if we, for example, look at Congo, I just come from a meeting with Denis Mukwege, the Nobel Prize winner, and we spoke about the sexual violence and we spoke about how much more needs to be done. Also, we are seeing more attacks on the right to contraception, the right to abortion, and cuts in funding, both because of the global gag rule that has been instituted by the United States, but there's also a general conservative winds across the globe where it is as if women's rights are for sale, and that is scary.
That was Kautju Iverson, the president and CEO of Women Deliver, speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The World Food Program says Zimbabwe is facing its worst case of food insecurity in recent history. And the UN General Assembly is in high gear this week as world leaders, diplomats, and non-government organizations work on strategies to deal with the planet's greatest challenges. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A number of former top Algerian officials, including two intelligence agency chiefs and former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's brother, have been handed 15-year prison sentences by the country's top military tribunal for alleged corruption. One of the sentenced men says the charges were politically motivated. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
15 sentences against four of the once most powerful men in Algeria were handed down in the middle of the night by a military tribunal in Blida after a trial which lasted just 2 days. Former intelligence chiefs Bashir Tartak and Mohamed Medien were given 15-year sentences alongside former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's brother and right-hand man Saeed. Former Defense Minister Khaled Nazar received a 20-year sentence in absentia. The four men, along with well-known politician Louisa Hanoun, were accused of conspiring against the army by allegedly meeting with a foreign intelligence chief to determine who would succeed ailing former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Bouteflika was forced to step down in April. Two presidential elections have been postponed since then as a widespread popular uprising roils the country. Acting President Abdelkader Ben Salah recently set December 12th as the date for new elections and appointed members of an electoral commission to oversee the vote. Deputy Defense Minister General Ahmed Gaid Salah, said to be the most powerful man in the country, says the military will remain neutral and not try to influence the election. Salah says that he would like to assure the Algerian people that the military has no political aspirations and that its only wish is to serve the country and its people. He maintains that the appointment of a new electoral commission to oversee the vote is proof of the army's neutrality. Hilal Kashan, who teaches political science at the American University of Beirut, however, contends the Algerian military is deeply involved in politics and that the former top officials sentenced Wednesday are being used as scapegoats to appease the public's wrath.
The deep state is very much alive. Figures are expendable, and you sacrifice them so that the military institution that runs Algeria remains intact. For the past few months, there has been a simmering uprising in Algeria. The armed forces stepped in to contain it, and by issuing these sentences, they hope that they could put the lid on the pot.
Former intelligence chief Midyan, known as General Taufik, called the charges against him politically motivated and maintained that he has fought hard to investigate and contain corruption.
J'ai lancé de multiples enquêtes sur de graves dossiers de corruption.
Midyan says he has fought hard against corruption, saying that the thirst for doing dirty business deals and doing them fast has overtaken the entire nation, and the lust for easy gains has put aside all morality. He says that criminal dealings by Algeria's ruling oligarchs sapped the economy and demoralized the entire country. Popular protests against the country's ruling business and political elites continue to fill the streets of many towns and cities across the country each Friday. Many of the mostly young protesters have been demanding that the country's political system be completely revamped. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
As reported, an umbrella group for Algeria's opposition has urged the government not to hold a presidential election on December 12th, saying it would threaten the country's unity and stability. The opposition wants reforms first, but in his first response to protests against the designated date, powerful army chief General Ahmed Gaid Salah urged massive turnout, saying it would provide the new leader with full legitimacy that will enable him to meet the aspirations of the people. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed Algeria's tug of war between the army and the protesters with William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University.
Well, the rejection will lead to a continuation of the current impasse we're in. If the regime tries to hold elections, they will probably have the same problem that they had between April and July, which is that candidates from major parties would refuse to participate, and you would have either no participants or insignificant participants, which is exactly why the previous attempted elections was canceled. It'll be interesting going forward whether the regime has been able to peel off some interest in elections. There have been negotiations on behalf of the government to try to bring more civil society and political actors into a dialogue process. But as of today, we're not really seeing much interest in presidential elections before there's more systemic change, including about how elections were run, the constitutional basis for elections, and what the roadmap would look like after elections. And on that, the government isn't giving much space yet for further reforms.
Did the massive demonstrations rejecting the announced elections on December 12 provide an alternative roadmap for Algeria?
I have seen a number of roadmaps that don't represent the entirety of the protesters, but individuals at various moments, and I have not seen a roadmap yet that really looks like a roadmap. They're more like lists of demands about fundamental change, systemic change, change that Algeria needs, but really not a roadmap towards change that would be accepted by the government. I think the most interesting comparison these days, and I've made it before, is Sudan. And Sudan, we have a flawed agreement between the two sides, which had to give up a lot, but at least they were negotiating and came up with an agreement. In the Algerian case, there is no dialogue with those opposed, the mass of the protesters, and there's no roadmap that seems to be negotiated. In the Sudanese case, it's interesting that most of the military people were allowed to maintain their positions, and you could imagine a similar situation in Algeria where, as long as certain fundamental demands of the protesters were met, a lot of people in the military could keep their posts and those around them, and leaving, I think, questions off of corruption off to the future. But at this point, there really isn't a dialogue worthy of the name, and without that dialogue, there won't be a roadmap.
What are the possible scenarios in Algeria within this tug of war between the two sides?
Well, there are many scenarios. Some where the situation gets better, like I was just talking about, some where the situation gets worse, like we've seen in the past in Algeria and in neighboring countries, and some where things sort of stay the same for a while. I think the most likely scenario right now is the stay the same scenario, because there really doesn't seem to be much momentum in on the regime side to dialogue, even though, as we saw in the study done by Brookings, there's a lot of sympathy in the lower ranks of the military and security services towards the protesters, which is a good thing for the long term, but we don't really see, other than that, much move at the top to make concessions. We see continuing detention of protesters, arrests of protesters, which is not a good way to facilitate dialogue. On the other side, I haven't seen yet someone who has the magic formula which will unite the protesters and create a platform to dialogue. We continue to see, like we see in many of the Arab Spring protests and post-Arab Spring protests, somewhat leaderless revolts that favor disorganization over organization, that try to sort of, like we see in Hong Kong now, disappear like water, you know, and move around like water, which is a good protest strategy, but a bad way to gain political power. And it won't be until protesters figure out how to gain political power rather than just critique political power that we'll have forward political progress in Algeria.
And that was William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University. He spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Justin Twait, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the United Nations General Assembly, plus growing Africa's agriculture. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.